Hello and welcome to Android Developers Backstage, the podcast. I'm Chet Haas from the Android UI Toolkit team.
I'm Tor Norby from the Android Tools team. And today we have...
And I'm the first guest to be featured the second time.
No.
I'm Kirill Grushnikov from the Play Store team.
Oh, if only you had come in 6 weeks ago. That actually would have been true. But we already had Dan Sandler.
Ooh, so I'm the second.
Yeah, okay. And not only does that show that you're not the first guest, but it also shows that you don't actually listen to the podcast because you didn't know that.
I do, so but I kind of awkward. Losing my memory. So, you know, that
All right, well, that'll be handy for today's show as we try to remember what you've been working on for the past few months. So
what are we talking about today?
I had no idea. You just demanded to be on the show again, and given the blackmail pictures that you have on us, we didn't really
Well, you know, I had this great idea that I'd be the recurring guest, like, on every episode, and you said no, so we'll do it every quarter. Well, I'd be interested in talking about the recent material redesign that we did on the store itself, and pretty much, like, across the entire ecosystem, if you're interested.
I think we could do that. I think that would be appropriate. So, yeah, the timing is pretty good, so... Lollipop came out, and developers in the wide world are now dealing with new APIs and new functionality and trying to figure out this material design thing. And that's basically what your team went through for the last many months, right? Sort of materializing.
Yeah, I'd say we started in early summer, and it's kind of ongoing because it's like, you know, people say that redesign sometimes is only this like thin layer on top of the app, but material reaches much deeper. Into like the layout system and the animations, transitions, and the overall like navigation structure. So it's not only the like, you know, putting the lipstick on the pig, if you will, but it's like redesigning the whole pig.
I didn't.
Did you just call the Play Store a pig?
I didn't call it a pig. Yeah. Just, you know, for the record, you did.
Yes. So, yeah. So it's a lovely pig.
How far along would you say you are with the material redesign? I mean, is it done now? Now you're just making continuous usability improvements, or are there parts that you still feel are still hollowish and you intend to go in and materialize?
So as far as visual aspects, I think we we've left hollow behind pretty much. But the only thing that is missing if you compare it to other Play apps is transitions between different screens. And that was our decision to, instead of trying to build transitions on top of the old skeleton, if you will, of how we built the store that was kind of starting to show its age. We decided to first rebuild that skeleton and then build the transitions on top of that. So this is why you're not seeing transitions yet in the store. And without revealing future plans, that's one of the missing pieces.
Didn't you just reveal future plans?
Just said that it's one of the missing pieces.
Don't worry, this part won't be on. It will. We'll just edit this one right out. A rewrite of some of the underlying architecture for Play Store. Now, in the time that I've been here, which is kind of the time that you've been here, how many times has that happened?
Maybe that's
something you don't go into, but yeah, it just occurred to me that this has happened before.
Yeah, I'd say that like it's the third major redesign, but this one reached... much deeper, especially if you talk about material having these different layers that move below each other, or sometimes, like, for example, navigation drawer that used to be kind of like it fell to be on the same level as the app itself, and now the new material spec says that it is on a much higher level, like closer to the user, if you will, so it goes over the entire app. Over the action bar, and the only thing that is above it is the system status bar. And another example would be where you start scrolling things in the store and in other Play apps, you see that we kick out the toolbar, and we snap, sometimes we snap the tab strip at the top right below the system status bar, and sometimes we don't. So these are on a little bit deeper level than just tweaking the color, so tweaking the typography.
So why does the elevation of the navigation bar, for instance, require re-architecture? I would think, you know, whether it's this view that's off to the side, or whether it's a view that you assign an elevation to so that it gets an automatic drop shadow on Lollipop. Doesn't seem that major. So
yeah, specifically the drawer was kind of like a standalone piece that only required us to transition to inflate our own toolbar. And then once you do that and you do a couple of attributes in the theme, then the drawer layout is smart enough to push the navigation drawer into the right place in the hierarchy. But if you talk about these different layers in the app itself, outside the navigation drawer, then you start talking about more like a little bit deeper changes in the layout itself, in how we just structure these different pieces and glue them together.
So we'll go through a lot of different pieces here, but I think one of the really interesting things about Play Store that it shares in common with a lot of apps in the wide world is that you want to be on as many releases as possible. So if you are materializing your app, you are not just talking about Lollipop. You're talking about how do you get a common experience across other releases that don't have the same functionality. So that would be good to know how you conquered that problem, or whether that's ongoing.
Chris Baines was on your podcast, I think, a couple episodes ago.
I recognize the name.
Now he's just proving that he listens.
Yeah. Chris Baines, let me just consult Google and quickly running the search. So what he is doing, he's doing the AppCompat support library that goes all the way back to V7, which is Eclair, Donut, Eclair.
Sure.
I'm not sure. One of the
Donut is 8. So
one of the earlier.
I think Eclair is 7.
Okay, and we run on Gingerbread and above. So what that AppCompat support library does is provide this backport, if you will, of some of the more important pieces in the material world, such as, for example, toolbar and action bar, which is pretty much like the same thing as far as just like toolbar is like the contents of the action bar. Yeah. Don't quote me on that. So that, for example, took care of a lot of things that we had to do in that part in the Chrome of the app, if you will. Navigation drawer is part of the drawer layout, and all we had to do, well, like the poor engineer who had to do it didn't like it that much, but all in all we had to do is inflate the toolbar dynamically instead of including it statically, and put a couple of attributes on the theme and the drawer layout from support library. Took care of that one for us. If you talk about colors, like, you know, flat action bars or like flat chrome, if you will, flat feel of the chrome, that is just like, you know, a view with background feel.
Android stuff. Yeah.
What I'm hearing is that this material redesign was no big deal. Just a couple of theme attributes and recompile with AppCompat and you were done.
Yes and no. So, for example, drop shadows, real-time drop shadows that were added in Lollipop with elevation APIs, that is something that is not available on earlier releases of the platform. Yeah. So we have to emulate it with drop shadows that are either drawn as a 9-patch drawable, or you can do it with Canvas APIs to just like draw, like, well, emulate the appearance of the drop shadow.
Right, but then the hidden trick to that is you need to then expand the bounds of those views so that you can actually draw into that area.
Yep.
So you affect the padding, or you have to deal with whether that view is being clipped by its parent.
Yeah, so you play with insets, you play with margins, and you play and play until it looks right and you don't touch it anymore.
Or at what point do you decide this is functionality that we don't need on earlier releases? So activity transitions, those are going to be tricky if you're not.
Right. So some things like activity transitions or fragment transitions for us, or being able to extend the navigation drawer into the status bar, are something that is just not available with official platform APIs, if you will. So you can like do dirty tricks, but we prefer not to do that. And so some of the things, yes, require Lollipop and above. Then you do a build check, or you do, for example, ripples, the new kind of indication that you press something or you highlighted something. And that is, you can try and emulate this on older platforms, but the performance is going to be pretty bad.
Yeah.
Like, it has to be hardware accelerated, which is provided for free, if you will, by the platform. We placed a couple of XML files into drawable-v21 to do the ripples. And by default, on pre-KitKat, it would be translucent blue highlights. And on KitKat, it will be translucent gray highlights. And so you kind of like regress gracefully, hopefully, on the older platform releases where you can, and take it as far as you can backwards.
But Drop Shadow, you actually did go to the trouble of making Drop Shadows work on all the platforms.
Yes.
You saw that as something important.
It's actually part of the, if you look at the support library, which is called CardView.
So I know that for cards they do it, but it sounds like you did more than that, right? So the card view basically has, you know, a card that paints a shadow around it.
Yeah, and that's where we took, it's part of AOSP, mm-hmm. so you can look at the source. And pretty much we took that source and adopted it to use it beyond the cards, if you will, on other parts of our UI.
So you're saying you didn't know how to access the source if it wasn't an AOSP? I like that bit, that the Play Store is actually going out to open source to.
Well, what I like about our ecosystem is that the platform itself provides a very rich set of APIs. And I like to be on the same playing field, if you will, as external developers. And I just don't like to use something that is not available to other developers.
Right, and we prefer developers wherever they are to not do that, especially since it gets into a bad situation where if you're depending upon something that was supposed to be an implementation detail and we change it, then your app could just fall down on the floor. In this particular case, you would have actually needed to look at the source before it was in AOSP, since you were doing this at the time.
Well, that's a nice advantage that you have. I'm not complaining.
Because our apps actually have to come out on day one sort of looking like that, and then everybody else is sort of led into the game to then start.
Yeah, and going back to your question about Lollipop-specific features and going back to older platform releases, so something nice that Lollipop has added is tinting, that you can take, for example, an icon, and do it like a white or grayscale or black, and then tint it at runtime. And that is something that is slowly finding its way, once again, by Chris Baines into App Compat. Something like, for example, the palette support library to extract dominant, vibrant, something background colors from the image. And so support libraries provide this a nice extra set of APIs that you can use going to older versions of the platform.
So how about, I see in your little crib notes here, the word layout. So there were obviously layout changes where we have these ideas of key lines and these sort of the 8-dip structure that everything is lined up on and these major axes that the apps align to. How did you deal with that?
So Material places a very a strong emphasis on grid across a specific screen in your app and across multiple screens in your app and across multiple apps. And when you get a mock from your designer, they treat a screen as this one big canvas, right? And so they say, okay, whatever you have in the toolbar, let's say you have the hamburger icon or the search icon, needs to align all the way down across your content, all the way down maybe to the system navigation bar, and the same, across both axes, horizontally and vertically. And you look at that, and then you start thinking about how it actually maps to the real content, linear layout, relative layout, whatnot, in your app. And then you see that those guidelines, or just lines, they cross all these different parts of your app. So it looks nice in the mock, but it's a little bit complex to try and align elements that, yes, they live in the same hierarchy eventually, but they might be in completely different parts of that hierarchy. And sometimes they say, okay, I want to visually align the search icon in the toolbar to the right edge of the card. And the right edge of the card, as you mentioned, it has drop shadow, it has insets and whatnot, so they don't want to align it to the actual boundary edge of that card. They want it to be aligned to the perceived edge, which doesn't include the drop shadow. And so at that point you say, okay, actually I have to account for that inset for the drop shadow amount, the horizontal drop shadow amount, and align my search icon to that. And
Didn't we get optical bounds in a few platforms ago, like API 18 or something.
Yeah,
like
you
that.
Did it on the drawables, right? On the 9 patches.
Well, I mean, so 9 patches is one thing, but if it was done right, it should have been on everything. Like every view should be able to distinguish between its bounce and its, you know, its optical bounce, mm-hmm. right? So that things like drop shadow and padding isn't counted. Because I think the way that, you know, for example, if you put two buttons next to each other, then basically they're spaced by a few pixels, and that's coming from just the 9 patch. And the view had no clue about, well, some of these pixels are blank padding. And it really, there should be absolutely none of that, right? So the layout manager should be able to say, well, where's the actual optical bounce within this? And the optical bounce would not include the shadow. And they could do the proper spacing.
Yeah, and that would work if these two views live in the same container, right? Not if you talk about multiple containers, if you go like a few levels up and then like sideways and then a few levels
down.
It's
up to the layout manager. Right, the layout manager can go, if you know, if you had some sort of smart grid layout, right? It's you know, you can do.
But this is not, right? This is not one layout that holds everything. This is like, you know, nested this and that.
But it has
all
to
over
be.
The place.
If you want this to be aligned with that, and they're in different hierarchies, you just have to come up with your own new layout manager, which goes and peaks not just at its own children, but at neighbors.
And
right?
Sometimes you can't, because, for example, toolbar from AppCompat V7, it doesn't expose APIs to query the views. So you give it the actions, like you give it the metadata that I want this icon, I want this string, and sometimes you say, okay, I want to always show this, or I want to show this if it has room available. And then whatever it does, that's its internal implementation, right? So like these parts of the Chrome are not even available to you if you want to play by the rules.
Okay, but I mean, I would think that a layout manager is going to operate on the view hierarchy, and you can always go fishing around the view hierarchy.
Which is a little bit fragile.
Yeah.
That you start, that the specific layout container is no longer kind of a black box that looks only at its own content.
Yeah, no, if you're okay with things not being aligned, then that is absolutely a fine solution to say, no, that's a black box, but it does, I don't care. But if you're saying, I want the rightmost icon to be aligned exactly with, you know, on the top and the bottom to be the same, this is what you would have to do.
But that's runtime logic, right? People are setting up
it
their layout resource.
Logic.
Right, but they're setting up their layout resource files, like the typical Android development thing is you have these resource files that define, oh, I want this sitting on the right side, or you know, I want padding of 8 dips or whatever. All of that stuff is pre-baked. Then you're saying that at runtime, you would have to go in and jimmy things
the
around.
The way optical
that.
Bounds have to work has to be runtime, right? It has to basically look to see, well, what is the current theme and what are the actual assets and what are your actual runtime bounds? And that's what it has to do because it'll depend on everything, you know, what the spacing should be. You know, and if it was really, if it's really good, it'll, for example, say, hey, if you have a label next to a checkbox graphic, that spacing should be different than, you know, spacing between two buttons, for example. Like, you know, the actual spacing between letters and widgets varies. It has to be done at runtime. Mm.
Yeah, so for now, we don't do that. So,
okay.
So for now, what we do is, for example, if we want to align something to the perceived boundary of a card, then we have to manually count. Well, manually, so we say, okay, this looks like 2 dips or 3 dips or 4 dips. Depending on how the amount of that drop shadow or the amount of elevation. We take that value and use that to align content across that vertical grid line, which is like, you know, it's it looks nice in a mock, and just things start looking a little bit more complicated in the implementation.
So when you show your implementation to the people who designed it, what's their usual first and second reactions?
It looks great, but, and then you get like a couple dozen bullet points of what's actually broken.
Yeah.
But that's the usual, right? So you have your timelines for releases, then you start negotiating about what is a blocker and what is not a blocker.
It's a funny ongoing conversation that we have between engineering and design, because they use tools that are necessarily not the platform, right? Because they need to be able to express the ideas that they have. So they're using these design tools which don't have the same constraints as the platform, right? They didn't build, for
they can
example,
like render
After
this
Effects.
Shadow that is like taking 6 hours.
The
to
shadow, or they can do
radiosity
something.
Radiosity and all this stuff.
Got, you know, these funky animations where it's like, well, I want the status bar to do this in interacting with, you know, the action bar. You're like, well, that's not the way the system works. After Effects is happy to draw this for them. So they come up with these ideas, and it's great. Like, I don't think that they should be constrained on the ideas that they have when they're trying to envision a design. But then they present these mocks, and the engineers think, well, that's not how the system works. So how about we do this, and we come as close as we can, and then you go back to them, and then there's that negotiation.
Yeah,
like,
you know,
okay, well, if these are the constraints, then let's think about this.
Yeah, and on your side as a framework engineer, it would also drive the evolution of the platform itself.
Yeah. Right, because we're going to necessarily stick to, you know, the buckets that we've created because, well, these are the constraints we're working within. But then if somebody from outside says, well, how about this, then that's going to push those boundaries. There are some constraints we're not going to get around, at least not now. But it is good for making us think, okay, well, is there a different way that we could approach it? So activity transitions were an attempt at that. It's that, well, our window transitions are necessarily very, very limited because the window manager can't know about the contents of the views. We can't expect activities to draw and give us enough layout information that we can do an intelligent animation because that means that we're going to wait for potentially a long time every time we go to every activity. So we can't do that. But it's nice to then have the option of saying, oh, well, but if an app wants to opt into it, and actually do an activity transition as it goes to a sub-activity or whatever, here's a system for allowing that, right? So the default constraint was window animations don't do this, and then the request from UX was, well, what if they could? What would it then look like?
Well, you know, on your side, it's interesting that, you know, once an API is added to the framework, it's pretty much forever, and then you just hope that the next
It's like marriage. No, it's not, actually. Yeah,
well, it varies by the country.
Yeah. And so,
like, I think you hope, like, getting, like, into your head, you hope that the next round of UX requirements from the platform doesn't take you in a completely different directions, and you get stuck with this, like, the current API surface that you can't even evolve towards the new direction, right?
Yep.
That seems like it's one of those wise things now where a lot of widgets are done in a library, not on
yes.
the platform.
So, yeah, because then they can evolve.
They can evolve and people can use them right away. So, you know, it used to be that the widget would come out and, you know, in 5 years when everyone's using that as the minimum, as the kit version, then you can rely on it for your
right.
for critical functionality. But now, everyone can go take Recycle Review into their apps, right?
Right.
And we can continue to evolve it. Everyone can pick up those changes. You don't have to deal with, like, incompatible versions of it.
And it also applies to other engineers on the team have expressed this, that that there are fads in fashion. And wouldn't it be nice if we didn't have to bake in today's fad into the platform so that, you know, 5 years from now, someone decides that, let's say, cards look really silly. So no one wants to use them anymore, but they're still part of the platform. But if it's in support library, which it is, people will use it when it makes sense. And then if it goes out of fashion, then it's not stuck in the platform APIs.
It's like we have to have bell bottoms in our catalog every year.
So let me ask you something off the record. If there's any API that you'd like to take out of the platform, what would it be? Like any specific widget or something?
I will not answer that specifically, but I will say that API design is basically building in future regret. I have not designed an API that I have not had misgivings about in
the
future.
Is that where the gray hair is coming from?
At least partially, but there's a lot of gray hair, so I have a lot of sources for that.
But you wouldn't really go out on the limb to say absolute layout, right? I mean,
ooh, absolute layout. I like that.
Probably should go.
I like that.
Certainly all the deprecations that we have in the platform, we're not shy about deprecating things that we don't believe people should use anymore. So that's a good hint as to some of the things that are there.
But what do you do with deprecated APIs? You don't start throwing exceptions, right? You don't, like, remove the implementation.
Typically not. In some particularly buggy or extremely problematic cases, I think we actually have removed stuff after a couple of releases. But it's mostly
remove
a build-time
the implementation,
thing.
Not the API itself.
What's the distinction? It's going to throw errors either way.
That you break at runtime instead of at compile time?
Yeah, no, I actually, none of the stuff that I've worked on has actually been removed. I think the potential is always there, so it's really
good. He's talking about people,
yeah, exactly,
code other people.
Exactly, no problems with it. It's a build time thing. We just want people to know that they shouldn't be using it. And I like some of the annotations that we've added too of saying in the Java docs, this is deprecated, use this other thing.
Yeah, that goes to partially what Tor is working on Lint, right? Mm-hmm. That you have this, I guess, like hundreds of rules that are not only about...
200 right now.
Yeah. So some of them are, you shouldn't be using this, you should be using that instead, right?
Yeah.
Oh, how about some of the new tools annotations, actually?
Sorry, what was the question?
Tools annotations, like parameter hints and stuff like that?
Yes.
Yes.
We have those.
There are.
Yeah. So
are those things you can talk about? Because I think they're interesting.
Yeah. I just am trying to think, have I talked about it already? So one of the things that we've done that I think is really useful is trying to add some type safety back to the int usage in Android. So, you know, everyone's heard that we're not recommending enums. Right, so for
it's
our platform,
an ongoing conversation.
It's an ongoing conversation, you know, where everyone's like, "Well, why can't the compiler optimize that?" Well, you know, until it does, we're still not recommending it. So, so the platform uses ints in lots of places for things that are really traditionally done as enums.
Like the colors, the resource IDs, the gravity,
and then there's the resource IDs, which is not like an enum, but it's basically like this way to pass around an identifier to something that really does have a type after all, because. You know, if you have a method and it's you know expecting it to receive an ID pointing to a layout, the compiler is very happy for you to pass in 42 instead, or an ID pointing to, you know, a string, and it'll compile just fine. It'll blow up at runtime. So we have annotations now for both of those cases. For one annotation is called intdef, lets you say, hey, this integer here should be one of these seven exact values, or you can say. It can be a combination of these. So you can use this for bit masks as well, which is, I guess, beyond what enums can do. And then at compile time, we will basically, I'm sorry, at IDE background editor parsing time, we will check to make sure that the transitive closure of this stuff actually doesn't end up passing the wrong type.
And that IDE is the studio?
Yes. Yes, Android Studio is the IDE that we are focusing on for sure.
But you did a bunch of platform work as well. So the at null or the nullable, like you added a bunch. So you added the ability to handle these or maybe IntelliJ
header
or whatever,
so
but you added it to the APIs.
There are many libraries that have had their own null and nullable. Like that's not something we invented.
Right,
so you know, IntelliJ had it for years. Findbugs had them. Eclipse added them recently. They're in a bunch of places, but we wanted to have them in the support library as well and in the framework actually so that you know, you don't have to go and have your team start looking at the licenses of trying to import some third-party jar. In the case of Findbugs, those annotations have class file retention, so they're non-free, you know, in terms of library size and all that. So we have our own that basically are sort of very easy to drop in. But on top of that, there's all these other annotations which are Android-specific, like the, you know, the resource type ones, for example.
So, there's the capabilities that you added, but I was also asking about, you actually added it to a bunch of the APIs, so now if people are actually looking up the reference docs or calling into it from their code, they're going to get the extra type safety hints or the null checks.
Yeah, that's maybe even more important than the fact that you can annotate your own code is that we've annotated the platform and the support libraries.
You had like these massive CLs that were changing like every method in the framework.
Yeah, I actually have one that's pending. It's been pending for a couple of months. So if you, after this one, go and give me a +2, that would be awesome.
Did they catch anything in the framework code after you've added the annotations?
I actually don't know. I mean, I haven't really run on the framework itself. You know, I'm more putting it in there so that we can extract time for information for third-party library to check the calls into the framework.
Yeah, that would be interesting to see like this massive code base that has been evolving over the last, what, like 8 years, 9 years? See how it fares.
I'm sure it's perfect. So moving on. Sorry, a little digression into the tools and annotations.
Well,
but that was a lot of work that you had done in Lollipop. Working on the annotations themselves, as well as like instrumenting the framework code to help out at the API level.
What do you have in Android Studio as far as like you know templates that are Lollipop specific? Like you know when you create like a new activity or a new fragment, did you add something?
No, we don't really talk about future plans. Although you know we actually one of the things we do now is that when you make a project, if your Minsk version is less than 21, we add the app compat. It used to be that we only added it if Minsk was 14, less than 14, right? Because the idea was if you're trying to target like Gingerbread, you need this for action bar. But if you already have 14, you got your own action bar, you don't need app compat. But now that app compat really is supporting material design, not just action bar, you really kind of want it everywhere, except unless you're actually targeting Lollipop. So our templates will now automatically insert all this. The templates will automatically also set, you know, give you the material theme if your API is 21 and higher and all that. So
yeah, that reminds me back to the app compat. In addition to providing some like toolbar, action bar, and these different tinting on select few components, it also provides a set of themes. So it's like theme.appcompat.something, like light with a dark action bar and whatnot. And it maps to the right core theme on the specific platform version. Yeah. So it would go to, on Gingerbread, it will go to like theme light. On Holo, it will go to theme Holo. And on Lollipop, it will go to theme material. And so it does the right thing without, like before that, we had to have multiple theme files in multiple values folders. And now we only have one. And it takes care of a lot of things, which is like,
so you
nice.
Only switched to app compat for Lollipop support. You didn't use it before or earlier to support Action Bar.
It was
like that.
Kind of a turning point for us, where the cost of switch was much less compared to the gains that would be we'd be getting across vast swaths of our pixels, like starting from theming. All the way to the specific like toolbar, action bar, and integration with navigation drawer. Like at some point, like we had this kind of homegrown implementation, and every time I looked at switching to it was action bar Sherlock at the beginning, and then the action bar from app compat, and it like wasn't worth it. And then material was the final tidal wave that pushed me over the limit, and then like yes, I'm going to spend. It took
so what
actually
I'm hearing
less
is that you're a bit resistant to change. I find that very surprising.
Yes. Do you want to go into that?
It dates back to your motherland,
yeah.
I think.
And going back to material-specific things or Lollipop-specific things, so one of the items I have here is typography. Typography has been kind of like the evolving language of the system, of the platform, if you will. And in Lollipop, we have the new variant of Roboto, Roboto Medium. And designers are happy to use it. And then you always have, if you are running on pre-Lollipop devices, you have to always ask them, OK, so what do we do on an older device? What do we do on a KitKat? What do we do on a Gingerbread device? Do we fall back to regular? Or maybe we fall back to bold? And then they have to start thinking, right? Because sometimes a designer will have this ideal view of a device that is like this, like let's say 5-inch phone running Lollipop, and then you have to nudge them back into the real world of more screen variations and more platform variations. What is nice about the material typography language is that it aims to cut down on the variety of type sizes and type styles used across the specific app. And so it's actually resulting in less, in fewer styles on our side. So let's say instead of five different type sizes on one screen, it will be only three.
But aren't there still problems where, so if they design it with Roboto Medium for Lollipop and then you realize you need to get it to run on KitKat, so you're going to pick a different weight that's actually on that platform, that must change your layout, right? That's going to change the size of things because now strings are not going to be the same size.
Chadwick told you not to use absolute layout.
Well, actually,
layouts do react to this, however, sometimes unpredictably, right?
Well, you know, if you switch to medium and bold and suddenly you have to fit one more character, right? That's the list of your problems because if you talk about, like, the usual guideline is to account for 30% increase in string length across different localizations.
Yeah.
So talking about like Swedish or German, just as a couple of sample languages. So the design can never be pixel perfect for English string.
Okay.
And for the specific width and height of the screen, right? So I always ask, okay, so what happens when
the noise?
Yeah. So what happens when the string is wider or like longer? Does it fit into the second line, which like you know maybe breaks the nice grid that the initial mock shows, or maybe it starts marqueeing, and if you have more than one string that is marqueeing, that's bad. Like that's very distracting. Or maybe it's okay to start.
I'm thinking of a news site that got particularly noisy recently. Yes, very bad.
And marqueeing, so, is that where the font's scrolling one character at a time?
Okay.
Or maybe
text,
it's okay
we
to...
We would call that the text. It's sort of a, it's a subtle distinction.
Yeah, or like blink. But,
yeah. Well, I think a marquee is like the, you know, the marching ants. That's what I was thinking, that the ticket tape is basically marching something.
Okay. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, or maybe it's okay to cut it off. Or sometimes on smaller screens, like you do SW360, which is the resource selector, smallest width 360 dips. You say, okay, I'm going to use the default font size as 21 SP. But on smaller screens, the default value would be, let's say, 18 SP. So it's a slightly smaller phone screen, let's say 3.5, 4 inches. And we still want to display the same information, so we go to slightly smaller font. And then you say, okay, does it need to be bold on a pre-Lollipop device? Or maybe it's okay to fall back on plain Roboto or Droid Sans, or like Droid, whatever, like the default before Roboto.
So do you have like 17 devices on your desk staring at you that you like flash your APK to?
So I found that specifically for us, we don't do media, we don't do Bluetooth, we don't do any, like we don't reach too deep into the hardware. Mm-hmm. We hope the framework, the platform APIs that we're using do it for us. Yeah. So I use Nexus S and Nexus 4 as examples of smaller phone screens. Of course, smaller by 2015 standards, right? Not by 2011 standards. Then Nexus 5 and Nexus 6 as examples of this regular phone sizes. Mm-hmm. Nexus 7 in portrait landscape as an example of this medium size tablet. And Nexus 9, Nexus 10 as an example, as two examples of wider devices.
Do people actually use the Play Store in landscape mode for Nexus 7?
Nexus 7, well, we have kind of like the expected, if you will, expected usage of the specific screen. Yeah. So the expected usage, and expected in air quotes, for a 7 inches portrait, and expected usage for Nexus 9 and Nexus 10 is in landscape, but that doesn't mean that people don't rotate those devices, right? You can't force people.
No, but I'm thinking like, so I use Nexus 7 a lot and I rotate it when I'm, you know, watching media or whatever, but for like browsing the Play Store.
I rotate my tablet 45 degrees and it's always a horrible. Could you handle that for me?
Yeah, you should
like
see
why
a doctor.
Is it only portrait or landscape?
You should
can't
see we? A doctor. but in general, we want to support every possible screen size, screen density, and screen orientation.
But then it's the release
to the two values of screen orientation, portrait and landscape, not like say
so
45
limited.
You know there are three.
Which is what? What's the
it's
third one?
Portrait, landscape, and square. We actually have okay. three. In the, I just happen to know that because we have to deal with that in the tools.
There's a dash small resource selector that identifies smaller devices that used to be a little bit popular back in 2011, 2012. So I have this 3.5-inch square thing with it kind of like you open it and it has a physical keyboard. I don't remember the name of the device. So that would be an example where it's an extreme case of how the design should scale down to smaller screens. So there, you absolutely should not be doing a landscape layout. There, you should say, okay, if I'm on the values dash small, I should always be using a portrait layout and make sure that we show some kind of amount of reasonable amount of information. And that is, it's kind of, I wouldn't say that it's a degenerate case because we still have those older devices. I don't think that anybody is creating newer devices of that form factor because people seem to demand, at least for now, larger screens.
Well, the Play Store gets lots of connections, and I think when a device connects to the Play Store, you get some of the statistics from the device, right? So more than anyone would actually
you
know
can go
what
to a developer,
square devices are still in use.
Yeah. We have a page with developers with statistics, breakdown of device screen size, device density.
Is that the SDK dashboard?
Yeah.
So that comes basically from the Play Store?
Yeah, you can see it there, and as long as there are devices there, we don't want to show like gigantic pieces of information that you can barely see, like three characters on the screen, right? So one solution is, like I said, to start using slightly smaller font sizes, for example.
So that was the form factors part of the question that you mm-hmm. answered, but there's also the different releases. So you listed like, you know, seven different devices that you want to run on to catch all these different situations, but then you also have the, well, what's this going to run like on KitKat where we didn't have Roboto Medium, or on, you know, Jelly Bean, or what's it look like on Gingerbread?
Mm-hmm. So on Nexus S, I have Gingerbread. On Nexus 4, I have Jelly Bean. And on Galaxy Nexus, forgot to mention, so I have two variants of Jelly Bean. There was an awkward platform bug that I'm not going to mention names here. So, like, it's about, like, text view line spacing, but that's too much information. So I have, like, two Jelly Bean devices. Then I have Nexus 7 on KitKat. I have Nexus 5 on Lollipop. And Nexus 9 and Nexus 10 on Lollipop. And a bunch of Zooms. I forgot to mention them. So I have three Zooms for Honeycomb, ICS, and Jelly Bean. So, like, that's my reference Honeycomb device, and every once in a while, our testers file a bug saying, hey, you lost the action bar on Honeycomb, and I'm like, just shoot me now.
So all these devices, you basically don't have room left for a monitor or a keyboard.
I do a 15-inch laptop, so it leaves a lot of room on my desk.
All right. Was there anything else? I mean, all of that sounds straightforward, so you lollipopified, you materialized the app, and you were done?
Yeah, you just take material as much as you can backwards to older platform releases, as much as it makes sense, while still kind of working around like ripples or elevation for real-time drop shadows.
Yep.
You say, okay, like what would be the adequate solution or platform consistent solution for something like that would be too expensive. In development terms or at runtime to emulate. That's it. So I guess I'll see you in April.
Well, we'll get together with the board and see what works out.
You have a board
schedule.
I didn't know you had a board.
We should get one. Yes. We should totally get one. Okay. I got nothing else. Tor?
No, I got nothing.
Okay.
No, thank you. That was interesting.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Danke schön.